And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Another exciting week to be with you as we approach Thanksgiving. A lot of things going on. But today I'm delighted to introduce you to my guest. As I've been trying to have guests over the last few weeks, you know, from different parts of the country in different walks of life in terms of pro-life work. And today's guest is Abby Johnson, president and founder of And Then There Were None, and former director of Planned Parenthood at Planned Parenthood, and author of Unplanned, which is an amazing book. Abby, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining us today. What we want to do and what we do every week is we just talk about life issues. We talk about legislation. We talk about just pro-life work in general, so with medical clinics like Hope. And today what I wanted to do by bringing you on is kind of talk about the work that you do that I think there are some pro-life people that really don't know that work is going on. And the focus in getting folks away from the abortion industry and helping find them a place to work and working with their resumes and that whole transition that you know oh so well. So I guess to start with, kind of tell your story and sum that up, and then we'll kind of go into the work that you're doing across the country in Standing for Life.
Sure. Well, I worked at Planned Parenthood for 8 years. If you don't know, Planned Parenthood is our country's largest abortion provider. They perform about 330,000 abortions every year. I was a clinic director for one of their affiliates down in Texas, outside of Houston. And, you know, got involved with Planned Parenthood really feeling like I was doing the right thing, feeling like I was helping women. I got involved as a college kid. I didn't know anything about Planned Parenthood, and so I was an easy sell for them. They started telling me about all of these women that they serve who are low income, and I just thought that sounded great. So got involved with them, was there for 8 years, ran one of their facilities. We did perform abortions at the facility where I worked, and left. A few things were happening at the clinic that were concerning me, but ultimately left in October of 2009 after witnessing a live ultrasound-guided abortion procedure where I saw a 13-week-old baby fight and struggle for his life during the abortion. And I knew then that I had been lied to by Planned Parenthood. I knew that there was humanity in the womb, and that if there was humanity, then that baby deserved equal human rights. And I left Planned Parenthood on October 6th, and about 3 weeks later, Planned Parenthood took me to court when they found out that I was pro-life. They took me to court because apparently they think it's illegal to become pro-life, but it's not, and we sat in court and listened to them, and but, you know, ultimately you can't sue somebody or you can sue them, but you can't win if somebody just has a change of heart, and so they lost, and I've been speaking out about abortion, about the abortion industry, and just trying to bring healing to those who have worked in the abortion industry or those who are currently there and want out.
Right, and I think the important thing is, and excuse me, and I'm going to encourage folks, and we're going to talk about that here in a second, to get your book Unplanned, which is just a great way to kind of look behind the curtain on what's going on, and also a great redemption story of what God can do and how God can use a number of different people to work in someone's life. I was telling somebody your story today, and I was saying, you know, to think about just the family that kind of stood around you and still supported you and loved you well. It was a perfect illustration of Christians doing what they should do. Now, your book obviously talks about some that didn't do what they should do, but the core supporters for you and to love you through that was certainly an obvious thing. And so what I want to talk about is, as you saw that and you you witnessed that ultrasound guided abortion, and then the first place that you went was to an office where it housed pro-life people that had been praying outside that clinic for years, right?
Right, and for several years there had been a group of people peacefully praying outside of the facility where I worked, and they had always said, you know, if you ever want to leave your job, you know, if you ever need help, let us know. And you know, I just always thought, well, that's never going to happen. So I just sort of ignored them. But then when I did have this moment of clarity, of conversion, I thought, oh my gosh, where am I going to go? And I just remembered that they had always said that. They had always, you know, reached out to me and said if I ever needed help, they would help. And so that's where I ended up going when I knew that I needed to leave the clinic. And I knew that I needed their help, honestly, because I was very well known in the community as the abortion clinic director. I tell people I was probably the most hated local celebrity in town. It was a very conservative community, and so I thought, you know, if I ever want to get a job, particularly in the medical field, because I thought, you know, I would probably stay in that field, I thought I'm going to need help. I'm going to need somebody to vouch for me and say, no, this woman has had a change of heart, and you know, you can trust her and your practice. And so that's sort of what I thought. That's what I thought would happen when I went. And but when Planned Parenthood, and I had actually gotten another job, and I was going to start working as a practice manager for an OB-GYN in town, and but then when Planned Parenthood took me to court, they sent out a press release as well, and that press release got picked up by the national news, and that's ultimately why I started telling my story. I had no plans or desire to even share my story publicly, but when Planned Parenthood put it out, that's when I started having national networks call me and, you know, wanting to hear my story. And then I started having, you know, groups, different people reaching out and saying, will you come and share this at our banquet? Will you come and share your story with our church? And so that's really what got me started.
And we're certainly glad that God used that moment to kind of bring you forth to share your story. So give the listeners a kind of a glimpse behind the curtain with what goes on at Planned Parenthood. You know, we hear a lot, you know, from some folks about how Planned Parenthood is all about women and women's health, and they do a number of things. And, you know, we've oftentimes heard the whole mammogram story, which we know has been debunked, and even by the CEO herself in a hearing debunked that. But kind of give us a glimpse as we look into that. The slogan, you know, that's thrown around quite a bit about abortion is safe and rare, and we know that's simply a slogan. Give the audience what that looks like working inside there, and what kind of went on in the meetings and what was discussed when in terms of budgets and abortion.
Well, one of the things that became concerning for me was the abortion quota that we had inside of our facilities. Planned Parenthood abortion facilities have quotas that you have to meet every month in order to meet your budget. And, you know, it had never been something I'd really thought about until August of 2009, when I had a budget meeting with my supervisor, and I noticed on my upcoming budget for 2010, they had actually doubled the quota for the abortions that we had to sell every month. And I just thought, well, that's odd, because, you know, here at Planned Parenthood, we are about reducing the number of abortions. I mean, that's what I believe. That's what I said to people. That's what I said to the media. So it didn't make sense. If that were true, then why would we be doubling the abortion quota? And I said something actually out loud to my supervisor, and she just started to laugh. And she said, why in the world would we want to reduce the number of abortions? That's how we make our money. And right then I just thought, okay, is it that the organization is changing, or is it that now I am so high up in management that I'm now finally seeing what the organization has been about all along. And I think that was the case. You know, Planned Parenthood repeatedly touts that they are a safe health care provider. We have seen that to be false over and over again. You know, pro-choice advocates say, abortion advocates say, well, you know, without legal abortion, women would be forced to go to these back alley clinics. People need to know that what took place in those back alley clinics is really no different than what takes place today inside of legal abortion facilities. Women are still dying. Women are still losing their fertility. They're still getting infections. Instruments are still not properly sterilized. You have unlicensed staff performing medical procedures. It's the same. And many times, many of the doctors that I worked with, they actually were the doctors performing illegal abortions before Roe v. Wade, and yet now they're still working inside of abortion facilities. So it doesn't make any sense to say, well, we didn't trust these doctors before Roe v. Wade, but now we do. And so it's just been I think people have been generally sort of mesmerized by all of these services that Planned Parenthood supposedly provides, and Planned Parenthood for many years has talked about how they are, you know, the primary provider for low-income women, but that's simply not true. We know that just according to the numbers, for every one Planned Parenthood facility, there are approximately 20 other healthcare facilities that will see low-income women for healthcare, and the majority of those facilities will actually see men, women, and children for primary and comprehensive health care. Planned Parenthood only provides extremely limited gynecological care.
Right. And I appreciate your honesty and your transparency. And we're going to talk more about it here in a second. When we get back, I want to get into the work that you're doing now with And Then There Were None. We'll be back in a sec. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center, joined today by Abby Johnson, President and Founder of And Then There Were None. And that's what I want to talk about right now, Abby, if you don't mind. Kind of talk about at what point did you move to, you know, you've been speaking around the country, you've had these, you know, interviews on national media outlets, and now you're thinking, okay, now I'm at a place where I know for a fact there are people like me that need to be pulled out or at least need help in that transition from the abortion industry. And what kind of started that ball rolling for you to go with And Then There Were None?
You know, honestly, when my book Unplanned came out in 2011, January of 2011, I started getting emails from abortion clinic workers. People who had picked up the book and read it. Now, most of them originally picked it up and read it as a critic, but then they, you know, found truth in it and they realized that they wanted to leave, and so they were contacting me directly, and I thought, for sure, I thought, you know, we've been fighting this legally, you know, this Roe v. Wade for 40 years. Surely, there's an organization out there who is, you know, nationally reaching out to these abortion clinic workers and helping to get them out of the industry, help them to get healing, you know, come back to Christ, whatever. I thought, you know, for sure there had to be something like that out there, right. But there was nothing. And I couldn't believe it. And I thought, well, gosh, that's a huge missing piece of the puzzle. I mean, and what are we saying about the power of God if we are not proactively reaching out to these people working in the industry? Are we saying, well, we don't believe that God can change their heart? I mean, that's sort of like this, gosh, we've had such little faith over the past 40 years. And so my husband and I just started helping these workers as we could. You know, they were coming out one by one, and we were helping them financially and trying to get them other jobs and everything. But there was no established network to do that in. So we decided that, you know, if nobody else was going to do it, that maybe we just needed to go ahead and get this started. So we started the nonprofit. It was officially organized in 2012. And So we've been at this for 3 years now, and we've had 193 workers come through our ministry. And six out of that 193 were actually abortionists who left their practice of aborting babies and now fight to defend life.
You know, in a few weeks ago, you joined us in Life Matters in the prayer initiative across the country to pray for medical clinics like ours, pro-life medical clinics, and also to pray for Planned Parenthood and abortion clinics. And I remember seeing a post from you that week. At the end of that week, I think you said, we've gone the last 3 days, we have seen one worker each day, so three in 3 days leave. And I thought, you know, even if through Life Matters, focusing and being very intentional in our prayer, if three people walked away from the abortion industry, then that is more than a success. That is more than we could have dreamed that would happen. And so we're certainly thankful for what you're doing. But my question is, how has the church response been? Are they stepping up and supporting the work that you're doing? Or are you finding that some folks want to focus more on baby and not necessarily on those that are working in the abortion industry?
Well, you know, I think that it's been interesting. The first 2 years that our ministry existed, I feel like, yes, we were getting a ton of workers out, and that was fantastic. But I feel like our primary, we didn't expect this, it's sort of unexpected, but our unexpected objective those first 2 years was to really educate the Christian community on the necessity of reaching out to these abortion clinic workers. And I think what happened is, you know, the pro-life movement got started, and it was sort of like, well, you know, abortion is terrible, and, you know, and who do we blame for it? Because anytime there's a tragedy, somebody has to be blamed.
Sure.
That's just human nature. And so I think originally it was sort of like, well, we're gonna blame these women. You know, what are they thinking, going in and having abortions? And then the pregnancy center movement sprouted up, and you know, they sort of convinced everybody, look, you can't blame these women. They're, you know, they're victimized as well. Many of them are forced or coerced. Society is telling them that abortion is a normal part of life. You know, we can't blame the women. So then it was like, well, okay, so who do we blame? Well, we're going to blame the abortion workers, because surely they know what they're doing. They're seeing this every day. You know, they are not victims. They are not innocent. And that was sort of, a natural response, but what people failed to see was that, you know, many of these workers are also victimized. About 70% of abortion clinic workers have had an abortion in their past. So, you know, we're talking about wounded, hurting people. And, you know, they need compassion, they need mercy, they need love just like anybody else. And they need a chance. You know, they need somebody to take a chance on them. And so that's what we really wanted to do. And so I feel like the first 2 years was sort of educating people on why this was important. And we didn't think we were going to have to do that. We thought we were going to come out with this idea, and every Christian on the planet was going to go, wow, this is the best idea ever. This is amazing, you know. But it was slow. It was slow. But I think through telling the stories of these workers, and I think that we've been able to bring some humanity back into the lives of these workers. And what's happened is, you know, the pro-life movement has criticized people who work in the abortion industry for dehumanizing the unborn. But what we have done in the pro-life movement is no different than what they've done to the unborn. We have dehumanized the abortion worker. So our goal is just to reestablish humanity, not just with the unborn child, not just with the woman having the abortion, but also with the person who's working in that industry.
Right, and I think the thing that I've come to understand working in the pro-life movement is there's so many arms. So you have the right to life, you know, the political arm, the lobbyist arm. You have medical clinics like Hope and others around the country, some that are going medical and doing great medical work, some that are more resource-type centers and mm-hmm. you know, material assistance. But the thing that really impresses me, and I'm with you, it's shocking that there wasn't another organization, another nonprofit doing what y'all are doing, because if we want to go out and show grace, and we want to go out and show mercy, and we want to love, and we want to be there for a number of different people, the opportunity is so amazing. As I read your book and I saw that you were at church and you remember talking about, you know, what you did for a living, and sometimes not being able to say that because of the way people would react to you or act towards you, and even sometimes pastors acting a certain way towards you. The amazing thing to me is what an opportunity there was to speak truth and to love someone through a time of struggle. And that is what y'all are doing. So how are people reaching out? Or is it they reach out to you? Do you have a way of getting to them? What is that? What is that process? If someone just happens to be listening to this, either live on the air today or through podcasts throughout the next few weeks, how can they reach out to you and kind of seek your help?
So we have a 24-hour hotline that people can call. The number is 888-570-5501. And that rings to one of the staff members who is ready to take information, to go ahead and get the process started, or really just to, if they just, a lot of times the workers that call us sort of had this moment of crisis. Something took place in the clinic, something happened, and so they just sort of need to spill it and get it out there, and they're crying, and that's okay. And people can call. People can go to our website, abortionworker.com. They can click the contact link. There's an email address there. They can, you know, email us directly. We can get back with you within 24 hours. You know, we have done a lot of work sort of trying to reach into these clinics. So we send mailers every few months, you know, nice, pretty postcards into every abortion clinic in the country. And we just want to let them know about our services, how we can help. And every time we do that, we get at least, you know, 10, usually about 10 to 15 workers that will leave after seeing our flyer go into their clinic. We make phone calls into clinics, just say, hi, my name is Abby. I just want to let you know about a resource that's available to you. Go to abortionworker.com to find out more. And
that's
then
awesome.
We just sort of hang up.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to talk more about that in just a second. I'm here with Abby Johnson, founder and president of And Then There Were None.
The same power that arose Jesus from the grave, the same power that commanded dead to wake, lives in us, lives in us.
And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center, here with Abby Johnson, president and founder of And Then There Were None. Abby, you know, we've been talking about the work that you're doing. We also briefly touched on when you decided to leave the abortion industry, you went to, you know, a pro-life group that had been praying for a number of years for your clinic and for other clinics and for you even in particular. And you went there because it was a safe place, and they told you, if you ever need anything, come and see us. Talk about the importance of pro-life people, not just people like me and you that kind of work in the pro-life movement, but just pro-life people in general. Talk about the importance of them allowing their words to turn to action.
Well, you know, I have people come up to me and they'll say, well, you know, I really make an effort to, you know, to pray for the pro-life movement. And I think, well, that's great. But if you have a real serious prayer life, that prayer life should lead you to action. And I really believe that, you know, we are really, we're at a very significant time in our country regarding the pro-life movement, regarding abortion. And we need all boots on the ground to get this done. It's not going to be, you know, the two of us that ends abortion. It's not going to be 100 of us that ends abortion. It's going to take every believer, every person who says they are pro-life, who says they believe in the sanctity of human life, it's going to take all of them getting involved in one way or the other. And, you know, maybe it's getting involved in legislative efforts at the state level. Maybe it's, you know, volunteering your time, donating resources, donating finances to, you know, centers like yours. Maybe it's, you know, going and praying out in front of abortion clinics. I don't know. Maybe it's all three of those things. But I know with certainty that every single person who says they believe in the sanctity of human life, if we really want to seriously end abortion and make abortion unthinkable in our country, it is going to take every single one of us getting involved.
Yeah, and I, you know, as we talk about it, as we talk about it in hope, and as I kind of try my best to get it out to folks, is our Christianity, sideline Christianity, is not Christianity. I mean, we've been called to the broken places. We've been called to the field of play. You know, I wrote a blog last week and talked about how sometimes what we find ourselves doing is, while people are drowning in the ocean and in the world around them, they're drowning in that. And what we like to do as believers sometimes is stand on the sideline or stand on the shore and just shout commands at them, like, swim, you know, do this, do that. And instead of, and none of us are even doing it in unison. So for the person that's drowning, they don't have a clue what they need to be doing. And not one person, in a lot of cases, decides to, hey, maybe I just need to get off the shore and go to them. And what we saw with Jesus is he went to them. You know, we see that with the woman at the well. I mean, Jesus showed all the disciples, look, I'm willing to go. I'm willing to go. No one is out of my reach. And so that's what the pro-life movement is about. Sometimes we want to kind of make posts on social media and do things like that. But what we need to do is allow us to then get into action and actually do something for someone and love someone a little bit deeper than we've loved them. And what y'all are doing is, I believe, an area that has just kind of been neglected, as you saw as you did your research to try to figure out if there was a place like that. But it's been an area that has been neglected, and I think a lot of times we focus, you know, so many people are pro-life because they love babies, and they forget that baby's being carried by a mom that's broken, you know, that a family that's broken, you know, a woman truly in crisis. And I think so many women say, the only option I have is abortion. And it's not because they hate the child inside of them. It's because they truly believe the only option I have is abortion. And what we need to do is speak to them with truth and say, we're going to be here with you through that. And talk about the importance of folks getting out and saying, I'm willing to get my hands dirty, roll my sleeves up, and go to work for so many around us that are hurting, that are trapped, that are struggling. And instead of, and not waiting for the government to do it, but us as believers saying, no, I'm going to do it now.
Well, and that's what Scripture calls us to do, right? Scripture does not say it is the government's responsibility to take care of those who are in need. The Scripture says that it is us. It is the church's responsibility. It is our responsibility to meet the needs of people who need help. And, you know, we are to take care of the orphan. We are to take care of the widow. We are to be the voice for the least of these. I mean, over and over again, Scripture basically gives us a plan for how we should handle this. And it is never, the plan is never to allow the government to be the source of help for these people. It is our responsibility. And as far as I'm concerned, every church in the United States should be financially supporting on a monthly basis a pro-life group in their area. You know, they should be sending volunteers. The pastors, you know what, we need clergy of courage in this day and time. We need pastors to stand up at the pulpit and call abortion what it is, call it a sin, but then also call for forgiveness and redemption. Because if we don't think that we have a problem with abortion in our churches, then we are foolish. Almost 70% of women seeking abortion are coming from our churches. And so we need the church to step up and be the face of Christ, be the face of Jesus to these women, and to show them what the mercy of Christ actually looks like, and to be the gospel to them. That is really where we need Christians to step up and how we need them to get involved.
So as you do your traveling and speaking around the country, and you know, you do that for a number of different clinics and pro-life groups, what have you seen? What are some highlights that you've seen of medical clinics? And let's just have a frank conversation. What are some areas where you get into these speaking engagements, and you're looking at a clinic and you're going, oh, no, you're not doing that, are you? Speak to that a little bit in the importance of not only doing the work, but doing the work excellent and doing it well.
Well, I think that I really believe that if the pro-life movement wants to, you know, really buckle down and get serious about being a part of this paradigm shift in our culture from a culture of death to a culture of life, I think a couple of things have to happen. One, I think every pregnancy center needs to begin providing services that can actually be competitive with Planned Parenthood. So just like what your center has done, you know, providing true medical services, not just providing a pregnancy test and ultrasound and send them on their way.
Right.
But getting to these women before they even have a crisis pregnancy. You know, 45% of women walking into a Planned Parenthood are going to receive some sort of STD testing. So, you know, and what we know from marketing, from research, is that wherever that person's first point of contact is, they are more likely to go back to that same place.
Absolutely.
So we need pregnancy centers to be that first point of contact. We need pro-life medical centers to be that first point of contact so that these women will never even darken the door of an abortion clinic, a Planned Parenthood. So I think that that's huge. I think we need, honestly, I think we need better follow-up in the pregnancy center movement. I think a lot of times we will, you know, I go to banquets and they say, oh, we had, you know, this many salvations happen in our clinic. We had this many people say the sinner's prayer and come to Jesus. Well, really, you know, coming to Jesus and salvation is not a one-time experience. So, you know, we have to work out our salvation every single day. And if it really is truly a moment of salvation, you need to be, these people need to be mentored. And I'm not sure that the pregnancy, I'm not sure that many people in the pro-life movement are really following through with that. You know, this is not just about numbers. This is about hearts and minds of people. This is about creating that paradigm shift. This is not just about making abortion illegal. It's about making abortion unthinkable. And in order for that to happen, we have to really be engaged at a very personal level with the clients who are coming into our pro-life centers.
Yeah, and that's what I, that's kind of our focus at Hope, is what we want to do is we want to provide all the services that we possibly can that will get these women in our doors. And also what we understand is when these women find themselves in crisis, so that maybe they think they're pregnant, that they're late, and they're just kind of like, maybe I am pregnant, I'm not sure. Maybe they think they have, they've attracted a, you know, got an STD or something like that. What they're doing is they're Googling, I think I'm pregnant. And so they're not Googling, I really want to find a pro-life clinic in town that also loves Jesus, that can tell me about Jesus while also loving me through this crisis. So what we do at Hope is when they walk in our doors, we're going to treat them medically first. And then through that process, our nurses and nurse practitioners can sit down with them and then have those conversations. So what brought you here? Why? You know, what kind of choices are we making? What kind of decisions are we making? Tell me a little bit about yourself, your background, your dreams, your goals, and how does this work? How does this fit in? Is this, you know, and it gives them an opportunity to see that they're going to be cared for medically first, and then we go deeper with them. Because the first thing they're looking for is that medical care at no charge, which they get at places like Hope. And I think some places around the country kind of miss that part of it. And I also think that some places try to be what they may not should be. We have some places that are great at equipping and giving out resources and maybe even education and really may not need to jump to medical just yet. You know, I think we've had some that have jumped medical too quick and haven't really kind of thought through that process. But it's certainly needed, you know, at some point. But we have to understand that medically, the medical service is what they're looking for first. And then that opens up doors for those opportunities to talk about Jesus and redemption and forgiveness and grace and mercy and all those things that come along with regardless of the decision that they make. You know, certainly we hope they choose life, but we know that some won't.
Right, absolutely. And that's really, I think that's where we have to be in the pro-life movement, is really asking the question, how can we serve? And what can we do to build up the ministries that are already out there? Because, you know, let's be honest, the pro-life movement is, we need help. You know, Planned Parenthood is getting more than $500 million
sure.
from our federal tax dollars. You know, pro-life medical centers, pregnancy centers, we're not, they're not.
We're not getting $500 million, that's for sure.
Yeah, and so, you know, these centers, they need help. And they need financial help. They need volunteers. You know, at Planned Parenthood, we used to pay our volunteers.
There you go.
I don't really think that makes them volunteers anymore. But we need people's help.
Absolutely. We're here with Abby. We're going to be back in a sec. I dare you to And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Today, joined by Abby Johnson, founder and president of And Then There Were None, author of Unplanned, which is an amazing book you need to go out and buy. Abby, to end the show today, what I want to do is simply kind of give a challenge to the listeners. So from a pro-life standpoint, and we briefly touched on it in the last segment, but what is it, what kind of call to action do we need to have for folks? There's so many things kind of taking our attention. You know, over the last few months, we saw the videos about Planned Parenthood, and they got a little bit of focus. And then now we have presidential debates that are getting the focus, and some of them are good, some of them are atrocious. And then we have, right now, we have the refugees. I mean, there's so many things taking away our focus. What is it that we can call our pro-life, our believers, our fellow Christians, what can we call them to do? To stand for life and to truly be intentional in their life-celebrating self?
Well, you know, like I said before, I think that people need to find their place. They need to find their place in the pro-life movement. So, you know, whether it's praying out in front of a clinic, volunteering with a pro-life center, getting involved in the political process, one, two, or three of those things. I think that people really need to discern where they fit into the movement. And honestly, sometimes you don't know until you go and get involved. You know, sometimes you don't know if really going out and praying in front of an abortion clinic is your thing. You may think it's not. You may think, oh, I don't know, that's not for me. But you really don't know if that is a gift that you have until you actually go out there and do it. You know, you may not think you would be good at volunteering at a pregnancy center. You don't know that until you go and find out exactly what you'd be doing. So I think we let fear, I think we let, you know, fear is not of God. I mean, I think that we let our own insecurities keep us out of the pro-life movement. I think we let our fears about, you know, being unpopular
sure.
or being involved in something that's controversial, we let that keep us out of doing God's work. And that's not okay. You know, God did not call us to be comfortable. Being a Christian should be uncomfortable. You know, going against secular culture, that should be uncomfortable, but it is right. And we can't let things keep us out of doing something that is right just because it makes us nervous. My mom, she always says, if you're a Christian and you're not making somebody mad, then you're not a very good Christian. So,
yep.
You know, I think that it's time for us to be very bold with our faith, to be very bold with our beliefs, and to stand firm in them. And if we lose people that we know in our lives, then, you know what, we'll just pray that they come back. We'll pray for reconciliation. But we cannot water down the truth of Christ, and we cannot water down the tragedy of abortion that's taking place in our country over 3,000 times every single day. I mean, we have to stand up for that.
Yeah, and it's so important that believers would first understand the numbers and the large amount of abortions that are happening, not only to understand how many babies we're losing, but also to understand how many women are hurting, how many women are struggling, how many families are dealing with the aftermath. And the church should be a safe place and be there for them. Remind the listeners one more time where they can learn about what you're doing with And Then There Were None, where they can get your book Unplanned, and how they can maybe if someone here wants to have you come speak at their church or an event, how they can do that.
Sure. The ministry's website is abortionworker.com. My personal website is Abby Johnson, ABBY, Johnson.org. There's a contact link. You can email me directly, and I can get you in touch with someone if you'd like me to come speak. You know, or if you are someone who goes out to the clinics to pray on the sidewalk, we have printable resources under the abortionworker.com website that you can print out and you can actually hand to the clinic workers going in, or you can mail them directly into the clinic just to let them know about the ministry that we have and how we can help them.
And the book is on Amazon and I'm sure other places as well.
Yeah, the book is on Amazon. It's in Barnes & Noble. It's pretty much everywhere.
And highly recommend it. Abby probably would recommend it, but I'm going to highly recommend the book to see truly what went on and to see what how powerful and how strong God is and to see what happens when you pray. As so many of those pro-life folks prayed and prayed for Abby through that process, and now Abby gets to kind of do the exact same thing. It is such an amazing picture of grace. Abby, we are so thankful that you joined us today from Texas, and we will have this up on the podcast tomorrow, so hopefully a lot of folks will listen tomorrow and in the coming weeks as well. Have a great, great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks, Abby.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Abby Johnson, founder and president of And Then There Were None, also former director at Planned Parenthood, author of Unplanned, an amazing book. So many great things going on with her ministry, with her work. And that's what we want to do here during this time that we have on the radio, during this hour where we talk about life, we talk about Hope Resource Center, but we also just want to connect pro-life folks from all over the country together. So we're going to talk to a number of folks in the coming weeks. I'm happy to say I will have Dr. Al Mohler joining me on the show, and we're going to talk about life and culture in his new book. So a lot of great things happening. Thanksgiving's next week, but we will still be here Tuesday, just like always. Thanks for listening.
Forgiveness, salvation's waiting there.